This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome back, everybody, to Something's Brewing, your weekly Texas Longhorn football recruiting podcast. This is episode number 18, your first episode of the 2019 season, the 2019 year. I'm your host, Jason Sukumel. I'm joined by a special guest, Dustin McComas, another partner in crime at Orange Bloods. Dustin's kind of our jack of all trades at Orange Bloods, covers baseball better than anybody you'll ever see, covers the Texas basketball team better than anybody you'll find in the market, and he also helps in football recruiting. Just got a lot of knowledge. So, Dustin, glad to have you sitting in with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I think I don't know how special I am. My wife might think I'm special in some other ways, but happy to be here and happy to be back at – I'm losing track at how many times we've traveled to San Antonio now for these – I guess now it's not the Army All-American game. It's the All-American Bowl, but happy to get down to San Antonio and get a look at some of these guys in person. A lot of these guys that are now signed, which is a change that I'm still getting used to.
Yeah, I was talking to the media relations guy down here where we're actually recording this. For those of you listening, Dustin and I are in a hotel room in San Antonio, and I'm going to go ahead and apologize in advance. The last one, I took a one-week hiatus with Christmas holidays, Dustin. Well, the one I recorded 2 weeks ago, I've just been dealing with these allergies. Dustin's seen it all day, but I've been dealing with these allergies. So as I record, I've got my throat lozenges lined up. I've got a glass of water in front of me.
He's not lying. There are several. I mean, they're unwrapped. There's some water. I mean, yeah, he's powering through right now.
So my voice has already cracked a couple times, but we're going to try to like Dustin said, power through this for the next 20-25 minutes. May not be our longest or best one, but I was talking to the media relations guy when I was picking up my media credential. He's only in his second year here, and he's still kind of feeling his way. He's a young guy, real, real nice guy, real helpful. But he was kind of explaining to me some things, and I was like, dude, I've been doing this. I was here literally, I think, the first one when Vince Young played, and it used to be outside, and the weather was miserable.
Yeah.
And now this thing's, it's gotten, I think, bigger and bigger by the year. And like you said, it was the Army All-American Bowl. Now it's just the All-American Bowl, but it's in the Alamo Dome. The practices they put these guys
up.
Thank
God, with
this weather, yeah.
The weather is so bad, and it used to always be I would dread coming down when they're outside because it felt like they would always be either raining, really windy, or really cold, or all of those things at the same time. And so much of these events depends on the quarterback play, especially when you're watching wide receivers, like we were watching Jordan Whittington today. So I'm glad that they're doing those things in the Alamo Dome now. And yeah, it's amazing how much it's changed. It used to be like the only game on the block.
Yeah.
So, and now these things turn into a big competition in terms of building the rosters and things like that. So thank goodness we were inside the Alamo Dome today.
Yeah. This is only the second year they've ever had the practices in the Alamo.
Yeah.
They've always been outside, which has been miserable. Like Dustin said, it's usually one of the worst weather weeks of the year for whatever reason, but that's funny you said that. The other All-American games you have on Thursday night, the Under Armour All-American game, which is down in Orlando, and I've been down to that one. I've covered that. It's a good time. But you're right, man. The kind of interesting kind of backstory with this that people don't see. These two games, man, they poach players
from each other,
and it's a dirty little process, and they get
it's almost like the recruiting process itself because these guys get offers now to these games when they're sophomores, and
you
got to jump on it.
And guys commit to one, and at the
jersey ceremony, and stuff.
But there's still back channel talks, and at the last minute, they'll flip to the other one, and it pisses a lot of people off. But and now you've got there's actually a Marine one, I can't even think of what it's called.
Is it the Shrine?
No, I don't think it's a Shrine, it's out in California, but there's like an NFL-sponsored one that they have a couple in Houston. And
isn't Chris Adamora playing in that one? Or?
He played in one that was, it was down in Mexico City.
That's right. Okay.
But there's one in Houston in January.
Why didn't we cover that one?
Yeah, that would be good. Put it on a beach in Mexico and I'm there. Wouldn't be dealing with allergies down there, that'd be for sure. We'll start out. There's different things I want to talk about with Dustin sitting here today, including just a great Sugar Bowl win for Texas and how he thinks that will or will not impact recruiting. But we'll start with what we saw today.
down here at practice. It was their second day of practice. Texas has three commitments down here: safety Tyler Owens, wide receiver Jordan Whittington, linebacker DeGabriel Floyd. So three Texas commitments down here. Only one prospect that's still on Texas's radar, Brew McCoy, and we'll talk about him. I think I do every week. We'll talk about him a little bit more, but Brew McCoy was not at the practice we were at today, so that'll be interesting. We'll be back out there on Thursday morning, so we will be keeping an eye on that to see if Brew's out there Thursday morning. But Dustin, any just immediate takeaways from today's practice, what you saw?
Yeah, it was my first look at Tyler Owens in person. I guess to Gabriel Floyd, too, but I feel like I've known him for so long since he committed early on. I've seen so much film and things like that. But, you know, Tyler Owens was the one guy I was most excited to see, because you look at his measurables and his track times and things like that, and you look at the senior tape and just how much progression he's made from his junior to senior season. And when you get these types of guys out here in these events, it often creates a lot of good opportunities for the skill guys in particular, whether it's one-on-one, seven-on-seven, or whatever. You're challenged by some of the best receivers in the country. And I thought he was terrific today. To me, it looked like a guy that the football playing ability and just playing the game and reacting to the game as it comes is starting to really catch up to the raw physical traits, the elite speed, the size, the length. He looked totally at home out there in the safety position. Had a big day, had multiple interceptions. One of the first plays we saw when we walked in, he made an interception. One of the last plays we saw, he made an interception in 7-on-7. So he's more than holding his own out here right now, and that to me was the guy I was most excited to see. I think after watching him that he's undervalued. I think that's what we thought when we watched his new tape. Wouldn't be a surprise at all to me if he's a guy that moves up the list. Jordan Whittington, I loved him since I saw him in state 7-on-7. The biggest question back then was whether he would play receiver or safety. Tell you what, man, he moves so quick out of that little slot position. We saw him so many times come across, just dragging across the field. We also saw a lot of times he was wide open in 7-on-7. The quarterbacks didn't find him multiple times for a touchdown. So he's been as advertised to me. He's coming off that gigantic performance in the state championship game. I think he's backed that up. He looks every bit of the playmaker that Texas expected when they signed him. And then, of course, DeGabriel Floyd, one of the better-looking linebackers out here at this event. Just for a guy his size, he really moves well. He's got some agility to him. He's got some athleticism. In that kind of 7-on-7 environment, he looked totally at home, which we know in the Big 12, you've got to be able as a linebacker to cover some guys in space.
In this 7-on-7 practices, they weren't wearing pads today. I mean, those aren't usually conducive to linebackers being active and making plays, but DeGabriel Floyd, he had a pass breakup, he had an interception. I tell you, all three of these guys, Whittington had probably, I said, maybe a half dozen catches in 7-on-7, one of which, like you said, and I think every one might have been on like a shallow drag.
Yeah.
But when he would catch it, he showed good burst, man. He was able to kind of get the edge and get the corner and get some extra yards. He did on one of them. He even got for the pylon, got in for a touchdown. All those guys, I think, made plays. You mentioned Owens. I mean, he had three interceptions on the day. That's pretty impressive. And he's an interesting dude, man, because Rivals just moved him into the Rivals 250 with their last update, moved him from 3 stars up to 4 stars. I thought, okay, that's probably about right. That's, you know, Rivals 250, that's nothing to shake a stick at. But I tell you what, I was down here for media check-in on Monday. I didn't know who he was. I'd never seen him in person. Mm-hmm. Well, I take that back. I saw him at a Texas camp from a distance. But when these guys are checking in, I mean, there's a lot of good-looking players, but there's a handful, maybe 5 or 10, that you're like, damn, who's that guy?
Yeah.
Look at my roster. Well, I'm sitting there with Jason Howell, former Orange Bloods guy, and all of a sudden this kid walks by, and I didn't know who he was. And I was like, damn, who's that guy? And he turned around, and they give him these little jerseys when they check in. I'm like, holy shit, that's Tyler Owens. So I hollered at him. I tracked him down and started talking to him. And when I'm almost like exactly 6 feet tall, probably with shoes on, maybe 6'1". When I'm talking to him, Dustin, I'm like looking up at him noticeably. And I'm thinking, man, this dude, I mean, the measurable, he said, I think Tyler Owens Rivals has him at 6'2", about 200 pounds. he's every bit of a legit 6'2". I think he's probably...
He might be pushing 6'3".
Exactly. I was going to say he's probably as close to 6'3 as he is 6'2". And just long, lean frame, long arms. But, you know, he and I were talking, and it's pretty interesting because you say, hey, the senior tape is kind of caught up to the measurables. And that's true. You put on his tape, and he's flying around making plays, and he's a heavy hitter. But when Texas recruited him, you know, they brought him into the camp. It was the Under the Lights camp, or Stars at Night, they call it, I guess. I mean, he was not on my radar, not on really anybody's radar. I give Craig Nivar and the staff did a good job of kind of finding this kid. They bring him in. Not only does he win the fastest man competition, then they had a dunk contest where they took like maybe five or six guys and brought out a basketball hoop and actually had a slam dunk contest. He didn't win that, but he was participating in it. Just tells you in itself he's a pretty good athlete, but... When Texas offered him right after that camp, this is in July, it was mostly just based on that raw athleticism, not so much what they'd seen on the field. Yeah, he impressed him at the camp, but he commits in September. Here we are a few months later, and, I mean, pound for pound, he's as athletic as anybody, I think, in this game almost, and he's starting to put it together. He told me today, man, hey, I'm doing things like just watching eyes and finding tendencies in these receivers so I can kind of see what they're doing with these plays. And it paid off for with three interceptions. So just a great start for him. And I think he's backed up that ranking, that Rivals 250 ranking. I think you'll see that even go up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think you'll see that go up as well. If you're a college program, sometimes the danger of getting a lot of these early commitments and making all these early offers is you've got to make sure that you're identifying guys that their arrows are still pointing up, and you're not getting these kinds of guys that
are maxed out.
Exactly, yeah. That have maxed out, or they've plateaued, or maybe they're not going to have the type of senior season because you're offering them earlier, or whatever. He's the classic example of just the arrow is pointing way up, and I think that you'll see, even when he arrives in college, that just you'll see him adjust to the speed of the game and things like that as his career progresses. But yeah, like you said, that's a feather in the hat to those guys from an evaluation standpoint, because there was some serious projection involved with mm-hmm. them in offering a guy like that early. And you've got to have some confidence that...
And I think it's that projection is happening a lot sooner than anybody expected.
Yeah, you're probably right. They probably didn't expect this guy to potentially be a day one impact guy. And it's crazy to say that when you think of the current safety on campus for Texas, especially if Brandon Jones goes back. Just, you know, B.J. Foster had a hell of a Sugar Bowl stepping in for Caden Stearns, who was the Big 12 Freshman of the Year. You look at some of those guys. I'm a big Chris Adamora fan as well. The safety position is loaded, and I'm sure Texas probably offered this guy thinking, okay, this dude is going to be, you know, 6'2", 6'3", runs like a 10.3, 10.4, 100 meters.
Legit 10.3.4, and he was clocked at a 4.3.1. He's
told
me at a Baylor
camp. That is incredible speed. Like 10.3 is, I mean, that is like state championship level 100-meter speed, and it's not just track speed. This guy looked like a football player today, and speaking of football players, Jordan Whittington, to me, pound for pound in the state, I don't know if there's many better football players. You know, he gets the ball in his hands, he makes plays, he knows how to get open. You mentioned the burst early on, just watching him. I don't know if he's going to win many straight line races, but him just coming in and out of cuts and coming out of his stance as a receiver and things like that, he had some juice today out there on the field.
Well, and he certainly backed it up at the state championship game for Cuero with 6 touchdowns. Yeah. And
whenever you're breaking Eric Dickerson's record, I mean, you're doing something right in a state championship game.
I mean, he and I talked on Monday at check-in, and you know, we talked about, oh, you're going to be enrolling at Texas in a few weeks, and what are your thoughts on this, that, and the other, man? When I said, all right, let's talk about the state championship performance. I mean, here we are, 2 weeks later, whatever the hell it is. And I mean, he just beamed. I mean, you could almost see these rays of sunlight coming out of his head and just grinned ear to ear, man. And he's very modest about it. It was kind of nice talking to him. He's like, well, you know, that was really a team effort, man. We made a pact going in that, hey, we're going to give it 100% on every play, and they blocked really well. But I'm like, yeah, dude, but you made some pretty damn incredible plays out there, too. I mean, that was one of the better just individual performances I've ever seen. And I'd say the most interesting thing I thought from this week with Whittington, and he told Dustin this today, and he told me on Monday, you know, I thought early on, I thought his upside was as a safety. That was his highest upside.
Initially, I thought that, too, when I saw him as a junior, 7-on-7.
Well, and I saw him at a, it was actually an Under Armour camp back in the spring. He was playing receiver, and the weather sucked. I get it. But he didn't have a good day. And I was like, I don't think that guy's a receiver. He needs to play defense. When I talked to his high school coach, I think it was right after he committed or something, his coach said he can be an all-world safety. He can be a really good receiver, but he said he can be an all-world safety. So I think we weren't alone in thinking that, but he's really kind of refined his tools. I mean, he catches the ball cleanly and naturally. But I thought it was interesting what he told me on Monday, and he told you today. I said, you know, your role, do you envision yourself as a slot receiver playing early? And he said, yeah, I envision myself, and Texas has talked to him about an Alvin Kamara kind of role, Kamara. And I said, well, I said, to me, that's interesting. That's more of a pure running back than, I mean, obviously you do some things in the passing game as well. And he goes, yeah, but he goes, I'm down for it. And I said, you're cool, you know, lining up in the backfield. We're not talking about, you know, putting him in as a wildcat deal and just letting the quarterback run. No, I mean, putting him in as a pure tailback. And he said, yeah, I'm fine with that if it gets me more touches. So I thought that was pretty interesting. That's the first time I've heard of that. And he told you today that he and Tom Herman talked literally on his way down here for this game.
They talked about it.
Yes. And that was, I mean, so this is a new development. But I tell you what, after seeing him today and certainly seeing him in that state championship game, you can see why they want to, A, get the ball to him as often as they can, and B, get him the ball in the backfield, man, because he can, he's got good vision, he's got good quicks, he can run with some power, he's put together pretty well. I mean, I think he could be a valuable weapon for them. So just some interesting dynamics, man. It gives them a lot of options with a guy like him, a guy like Jake Smith, who's not nearly as big as Whittington, just from a, just kind of a frame.
Whittington's jacked, man.
He looks like a linebacker. I've always said that.
His biceps and stuff, like, you put him up against those linebackers, and he might have the most impressive arms out of any of those guys.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting, man, how they kind of divide that up and get guys like him and Jake Smith involved and just utilize their versatility. But I think the staff will get it figured out pretty quickly. But, yeah, pretty impressive day for him overall. And then Gabe Floyd, you know, talked about him, just a linebacker. Again, these situations, for those of you who haven't seen as much as Dustin and I have, I mean, they're not wearing pads. You can't go up there and just thud running backs coming through the line. It's not really 7-on-7. It's a passing game, so it's not really set up for linebackers to do well. But, I mean, he was involved today and, you know, was around the football in the middle of the field, did a good job patrolling the field. Every time I looked up, he's out there dancing, so the dude clearly is having fun. But
he loves football.
He does. He loves football. And, you know, I talked to him this on Monday and just talked about his love for the Texas Longhorns, which is pretty incredible. He's from California. He was at one time committed to USC. Now he is arguably Texas's most active recruiter in this class and most publicly pro Texas Longhorn recruit in this class. And he put it in perspective. He goes, man, I just feel like this is fate and this is God's plan. A little background, and I wrote about this in my column today, but Tom Herman played college football with his head coach at Westlake Village when they were in college. They played together. DeGabriel Floyd's, he calls it his parents. They're not his biological parents, but they've kind of helped raise him and take him under his wing. His father passed away at a young age. His mom's not really involved. So these people, for all intents and purposes, are his parents. He calls them his parents. They basically retired and moved to Austin. He'd been to Austin a bunch of times, but Texas wasn't recruiting him because they didn't know all this backstory. Well, his coach reaches out to Tom Herman and says, hey, man, you want to take a look at this kid? A, he's a great player. B, I know you. I can vouch for you. C, he's in Austin a lot. Sure enough, Texas looks at him. They love what they see. He comes and visits. He comes to Austin and visits his family. Goes to the UT campus, loves it. Comes back a couple weeks later. Boom, he commits. And, I mean, he's been to Austin probably 10 times since then.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to hear him tell the story. And he goes, man, I just feel like this is God's plan and it's fate. And you don't argue with that. And hell, I'm not going to argue with him.
No.
When he's sitting across the table.
Today.
Yeah, when he's sitting across the table from me.
I'm seeing him today. Yes, sir. Definitely not. And you mentioned USC. That's a big loss for USC. That was a big position of need for them in recruiting this cycle. And, you know, you mentioned that one time he was committed to them. He's a guy that everybody we talk to in California, I've talked to multiple people out there, they all sing his praises in terms of what kind of player he's going to be in college. So to have that kind of guy be a ringleader of a recruiting class, And it's always cool to hear stories like that from guys that are just so genuinely, like, you know, about like this being such a huge moment, and like I'm all in.
It's
with
easy
it.
To root for,
yeah, like,
it just
like
is, you know?
Somebody like that. I mean, that's going to be a guy I think Texas fans over his career is definitely got. He has a high potential to end up being a fan favorite for those guys over his career.
Well, we deal with a lot of. Just call it what it is, a lot of shitheads. You know,
yeah.
They're teenage. Hey, I was a shithead when I was a teenager.
I still am sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I can vouch for that. but, you know, I mean, when you get to cover a guy like DeGabriel Floyd, who's hadn't been easy for him, he's had to overcome some things, but just when I talk to him, he's just a big smile on his face, and he's really genuinely thrilled to be a part of this class and to be a part of the Texas program. I mean, and Texas recruits a lot of those kinds of kids, but it's easy. You know, we talked about Tyler Owens, and same thing, man. When I talked to him on Monday, that was the first time I talked to him face-to-face. I talked to him on the phone, but, you know, today I see him and he comes up and he gives me a bro hug and he was happy to see me and glad to talk to me again. And it's refreshing to deal with someone like that sometimes. Then we see the other side of the coin, too.
Yeah, but far too often, unfortunately.
All right, Dustin, let's switch it up a little bit, change gears here. I want to talk about, of course, Brew McCoy, the five-star athlete out of Mater Dei High School in California. Really the only uncommitted prospect here that any Texas fans care about. He's down to Texas and USC. I said it earlier, he wasn't at practice today, so we didn't get a chance to see him. But, you know, I did talk to Brew on Monday. And it was a crazy-ass day, but I got about a one-minute interview with him was all after literally waiting for him for about 5 hours. And it wasn't Brew's fault. And when I talk about good kids, listen, Brew McCoy is one of the nicest young men you'll ever meet. But I was a little bit frustrated. I got about 1 minute with him. I did basically a walking interview where he was walking somewhere and I just had to stick my mic in his face. And okay, let me get a couple questions in. But, you know, I basically said, hey, Brew, where do things stand at this minute? And he said, well, you know, I'm signed, sealed, and delivered. My mind's made up. I'm looking forward to letting everybody know on Saturday at the All-American Bowl. And I said, okay. Oh, I said, have you signed your letter of intent? He said, yes, I have. Then, you know, I said, okay, talk to me about the draw with Texas. Talk to me about the draw with USC. You know, he had just a lot of positive things to say about both programs. And I think it's legit. And that's why he's been so torn with this decision all along. But his mind is made up. And, you know, I don't know how much you've paid attention to it, Dustin, but just reading the tea leaves for me, it still seems like USC. There's been confidence on both sides of this thing, okay?
Which we don't see very often.
No, you don't. It's this late in the process especially.
Mm-hmm.
Usually both sides have a pretty good idea. But Brew McCoy, there's confidence on both sides, but I tell you, the confidence on the USC side, and I'm not talking about USC staff members. I don't talk to those guys, but I talk to people who do talk to those guys. And their confidence, when I say is high, that's me understating it. I mean, they pretty much think he's locked in, especially with the hire of Cliff Kingsbury. Can Texas pull a rabbit out of the hat? I think some weird things would have to happen in this. Never say never, I'll say that. But I think some weird things would have to happen with this recruitment. But I am expecting him to verbally commit to Southern Cal on Saturday. That being said, man, Texas really has made this one interesting. He has a ton of respect for the Texas coaches, including Drew Merringer. He told Adam Gorney from Rivals.com today, he said, hey, that's my dude, Drew Merringer is, and if it wasn't for him, Texas wouldn't even be in the picture.
Right.
That's how much he loves Drew Merringer. Loves the idea of playing in front of 100,000 fans. But I just think that home draw to USC, having former and current teammates at USC and committed to USC, I think that's going to be tough to overcome.
Yeah, I think so too. And I don't know off the top of my head the numbers for this, but I think one of the rules in recruiting in the West Coast is if there's a really good player from Mater Dei that USC wants, more often than not, USC is going to get that player. And the fact
they've got three that I know of on their roster, or two on their roster right now, and their quarterback will be going next year.
Exactly, so. And that's tough to overcome. But we know in the work Drew Merringer has done the last couple of cycles now as a recruiter, if you look at the talent that's coming at the receiver position, he's done a really good job. So, yeah, like you said, it's rare to get this stage in the game and there's, you know, that sort of confidence on both sides. We don't really see that often. And I think that that speaks to just how close of a recruitment this has been.
And I'll tell you what. Brew told me he signed in December with one of the two schools. He told other reporters that. He's told other recruits that. Even though he signed, I still think he's, I mean, there's nothing you can really do about it now, but I still think he's torn. I think that's how close and how much of a struggle this has been. He's probably sitting there wondering, did I make the right decision? Right. That's how much, that's how close this race has been. And I just want to leave it at that. I still think there's, that he's probably torn because it's been that close of a race back and forth. And his family supports Texas. Of course, they support USC being from right there, but just a tremendous job by Texas to be in this one. And we'll see. We'll see where the cards fall with this one come Saturday and whatever happens after that maybe. Yeah. But, yeah, I want to keep this. We're going to wrap this one up here soon. There's one more thing I want to touch on. We've got a Texas basketball game McComas will be working on tonight. My voice has already given out once on this podcast. Thanks for the tricks of technology we were able to edit it. But my voice did give out a few minutes ago.
My days of a producer at the old ESPN Austin using Audacity came in handy while Sukumel was about to die. So luckily I was editing the audio and not giving you CPR or the Heimlich maneuver or something like that.
I'm just hoping my voice holds out for one more topic that we can. So I'm going to bring it up. And I'm going to go first, and then I'm going to let you, I'm going to hand off to you and let
Smart
you go.
Move.
The Sugar Bowl. I mean, amazing win for Texas. Beats up on Georgia. Not just beat them, but beat them soundly, physically whipped them. I wrote about it in my column. Will this, everybody says, okay, recruiting's going to take off now. I agree with that. Now, I don't think it's going to be a big windfall in 2019 because there's only a month left before signing day. Texas has a very limited number of spots remaining. But I'll tell you what, I think that win pays big dividends for the Texas staff with the 2020 class. You know, a guy like Zach Evans, you're going to be able to build some quick momentum there. I tell you where I think this really helps, and I think maybe this has been undervalued. I mean, Texas is still looking for grad transfers. They're still looking for JUCO options along the offensive line, maybe at defensive line along at running back. Dude, look what you can go to these guys now and say, hey, you want to win right away? You want to compete for championships? We just played for a Big 12 championship. We played in the Sugar Bowl.
Right.
We have open – it's not like it's a saturated depth chart. We have spots where you can come in and play early. We just did that by playing two grad transfers and a JUCO product at linebacker. Where's better than Texas if you're a grad transfer or a JUCO player to compete for championships, play on a big stage, and make an immediate impact? I mean, that's a great selling point for Texas, and I think it's going to pay dividends for them potentially on the grad transfer or JUCO college, junior college market, and that could pay. You know, that could happen in the next month or two.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You look at the obviously Calvin Anderson coming in and helping solidify that offensive line all year, the best Texas offensive line we've seen in a long, long time. Against going against a Georgia defensive line last night that was bringing out freshman five stars. Georgia signed 8 5 stars last year in the recruiting class, which is more than Texas has on its entire roster. And those guys are coming in waves, and the job of Calvin Anderson, those guys on Texas offensive line. But Trey Watson had maybe his best game at Texas.
Yeah, I think so, no question.
And he ran so tough, and he was so emotional, and he was so into it, and had such a big impact. And then you've got Gary Johnson, who's been the star of the defense the entire. There's a
comes
JUCO.
Up with a big sack in the fourth
right,
quarter.
There's a JUCO guy. There's two grad transfers. That were kind of in different situations. Calvin Anderson was wanted by everybody. And Trey Watson, not as high profile of a recruitment, but a guy that ended up playing a huge role for this Texas team. So those guys can make an enormous impact on a college program. And you're right, this isn't a depth chart that is just loaded top to bottom with a bunch of great recruiting classes and that it's just a next man up type of thing. It's not like that. And I think I heard
the roster's not there yet.
No, it's not. I think I heard Tom Herman allude to that. Or maybe it was somebody that Georgia. When somebody goes down, they just bring in another freshman All-American in there. In Texas, it's a little bit different. It's getting better, but it's just not quite there yet. So yeah, if you're a JUCO player or a graduate transfer, and we're seeing more and more of these graduate transfers now, Texas it has to look like a very appealing option. And just the way Texas won that game, too, it was just a total team effort. They were better in special teams. They were better on defense. They were better on offense. They were better from the opening kickoff into the final whistle. They were the more tougher physical team. And you've got a guy like Sam Ehlinger up there standing that's a sophomore. He's only going to be a junior next season. That guy's going to be around for a couple more years probably. So I do think this will be felt much more in the 2020 class and probably beyond. But this that type of moment, we know in recruiting that the players don't get too high or low with the results like fans do. But big moments like that, they remember those types of moments. Oh, yeah, I remember
One to end the season. That's exactly going to be the lasting everybody impression was for the next 8 months.
Everybody was watching that. It's going to be brought up over and over again. Those types of statement moments are the ones that really resonate with recruits because they watch them. They're going to hear about it over and over again. I was talking to Jordan Whittington today. He said all the guys at the All-American Bowl are watching all those bowl games. They're all talking about it. Those are the sorts of things that really resonate for a long, long time with recruits. And, you know, we know Texas has done a good job recruiting the last couple of cycles. They've got to follow that up with you know, another class to stack beyond that and another class. And even at a higher level, that's how you get to those sorts of playoff caliber rosters that you're seeing at the Georgias and the Clemsons and the Ohio States and the Alabamas right now.
Yeah, I mean, listen, getting a great class for 1 or 2 years, that's fantastic. But that's not how you build a true championship contender. You've got to do it year in and year out. And I think, you know, that Sugar Bowl win gives Texas a good chance to get into that realm. I mean, it's a big shot in the arm. It should be for the Texas recruiting efforts. And that being said, listen, it's going to be tough sledding. Oklahoma's still going to recruit well. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M is going to recruit well. They had a good year under Jimbo Fisher. But, you know, everything.
LSU is nearby.
LSU is. Texas plays them early in the year next year. So, but, you know, A&M came off an impressive bowl win. They beat up on North Carolina State pretty handily, and I think Aggie fans were puffing their chest out a little bit, and then now Texas can say, oh, yeah, look what we just did.
So, yeah, that wasn't no Sugar Bowl.
That's right. It wasn't Georgia you just beat up
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Just a really good week for Texas in recruiting. We'll see if it continues with Brew McCoy's announcement on Saturday. But you got the Under Armour All-American game on Thursday night. Be watching that one closely. The All-American Bowl on Saturday at noon. I'll be at that game. And so we'll have a lot to talk about. I'll be back next week, hopefully with I hope my voice is better next week. I'm getting really, it's been a long time where I've been dealing with this
crud. Smell near the microphone right now. It's just all the Hall's cough drops. We got to get you on some Fisherman's Friend. Those are like the strongest cough drop. I learned this from Chad Hastings, who does radio in Austin. I used to always see, he always have these Fisherman's Friend. I was like, what are these things? And he unwrapped one, and I was like, whoa, those things
sounds
are powerful.
Sounds pretty nasty, but okay.
No, you got to get some Fisherman's Friends.
You mean my Halls and my plastic cup of water is not, that's not the,
you know,
what the doctor ordered?
We roll at the highest level when we travel.
Yes.
So the Ritz-Carlton, apparently, they're washing all the glasses right now. We can only find Halls cough drops.
Yeah, Well, listen, Dustin, I appreciate you sitting in. I don't think I would have made it through this one genuinely without Dustin taking a lot of the heat off of my plate for me. So appreciate Dustin sitting in. Thanks to our partners at the Yak, as always, for hosting. This is episode number 18 of Something's Brewing. This is our first episode of the 2019 calendar year. We'll finish off with 2019 recruiting over the next month. I'll be back next week, hopefully, with a better voice to kind of give an update on where things stand heading down the home stretch. As always, thank you, Dustin. As always, I thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.